Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
In the air. I can feel it. It's October baseball. What's up, good people of the Bad Signal Podcast? The Bad Signal Podcast brought to you by Better Edge. I'm your host, Courtney Fallon. Steve Armato is here to preview the game. It's a winner take all. Game 7 feel. I was there last Sunday. It was embarrassing. I wouldn't even tell you that I was at the Red Sox and Yankees game. It was that bad. They got swept out of town. John Jastrzemski didn't even show up on that game. But tonight is the night. What is up, my friend? You, overly optimistic Yankee fan, myself, ace in the hole Red Sox fan. I know that they're taking this one home tonight. Shades of Aaron Bleepin' Boone. And it's going to be a misery for the Yankees for the next 9 months. What do you say?
Wow, that's bold. By the way, happy to be back, by the way. So thank you for that. I mean, look, you just threw that at me like that. I actually do think the Yankees are going to win the game tonight. Now, I'm a little concerned where they're getting offense from, because the lineup that just came out is they're basically trying to win 2-0 tonight.
Okay. I mean, all right. Well, I think that there are some, as we all know from the Patriots and Bucks games, we go by statistics now. You know, we go by the next gen stats, and even Hall of Fame head coaches like Bill Belichick are going to be like double checking the numbers to make sure that they can go for it on 4th-and-3 or kick a field goal. So I believe that the Yankees and the under in this game, in these particular games, are more likely to hit than not. They are not looking, typically you'd say it's like a 7-6 game or a 7-5 game. They are going straight defense for the New York Yankees. And they know that they can do that, because regardless of Gerrit Cole has a really shitty outing, or it's the same reflections of what Chris Sale did a couple of nights ago, where he pitched 2 innings. They pulled him in the second. They went deep into the bullpen. Sale, by the way, not even on the roster tonight for the Red Sox. But the Yankees going heavy on that bullpen, because they can.
Yeah. And also, I think a big thing tonight that a lot of people, maybe not a lot of people, are missing, but no JD Martinez for the Red Sox. I think that's going to hurt that lineup a little bit. Now, I understand that they mash at home, but if you look at the numbers, like the Yankees, two of their best hitters actually have Stanton and Judge have really good numbers against Eovaldi, and it's in like a pretty large sample size.
Eovaldi. I was listening to a couple of shows, like national shows, and I was like, oh my goodness, really?
Eovaldi.
It's Eovaldi. Nate Eovaldi. Okay.
Nate Eovaldi. So yes. Now he's not one of my favorites. I will say this about Eovaldi. He like made me put my foot in my mouth a few times early in the season, because I was talking about how he's so inconsistent and he's not that good. And then he goes and throws like 6 shutout innings.
Yep.
But tonight you got Stanton 9-for-30, 2 doubles and 2 home runs off him. So that's a 300 average, 2 doubles, 2 home runs. Aaron Judge 9-for-23, 2 doubles and 1 home run off of him. And then you got, this is a small sample size, Anthony Rizzo's 5-for-9 with 3 doubles against Eovaldi. Those are basically the boppers in the Yankees lineup tonight. That's where the offense is coming from. That scares me a little bit. On the other hand, Gerrit Cole hasn't been like that Cy Young Gerrit Cole over his last few games.
He's only making $38 million this year. I mean, right. good grief.
I mean, 38 mil. By the way, if he comes better, out.
I mean, like if he loses this game.
Oh, I was just going to say, if he comes out and lays an egg, the media is going to crush him.
Well, so our buddy John Jastrzemski was on the show, and I, you know what? I might not just do that. I'm just going to enter the clip right here about what he said about Aaron Boone and could his time come?
The Yankees hired Aaron Boone. They were fresh off of going to game 7 of the ALCS against the Houston Astros.
Yeah.
They haven't come as close since he's become the manager. They lost to the Red Sox. They flamed out in 2019. Last year, they lose to Tampa. Weird year, COVID year. But if the Yankees are not in the playoffs, I mean, they were the American League favorites to go and represent the AL in the World Series.
Yeah.
You're going to tell me if they miss the playoffs or they lose in a wild card game, you're extending Aaron Boone for the next 3 or 4 years? You're the Yankees. Are you kidding me? Like, the Yankee fan base, Courtney, is going to lose their mind if they lose this week and next week, and they're out of the playoffs, and they're like, hey, Aaron, you're coming back for 3 more years. Thank you, fans are going to be like, what the fuck?
Aaron Boone, if they lose this game, he's
gone. Yeah, he's out. Yep. So you agree with the clip that I just ran. Yeah. And I would say the same as the Yankees, just given the Red Sox were up, 10 games on them by the trade deadline. They made some aggressive moves. They proved to the world that they wanted to win now, which the Red Sox totally did not. I would say that the Yankee season, to me at least, you know, they did well. For what they were in the middle of the summer,
they needed those acquisitions. But the thing was, I never understood the Gallo acquisition, because if you look at their lineup, right, they have a bunch of guys who walk and hit home runs and don't really hit for average, and they just brought in the same guy just as a lefty. Now Rizzo made a lot more sense to me because of the type of player that he is. Great defense at first base. He makes contact. He'll hit the ball over the field. But like the Gallo trade, which I know they have him for next year, but they just added another guy who was similar to the problems they were already having. And like Yankee fans want to run this guy out of town, by the way, already. I mean, they want to run everybody out of town. They were trading Stanton for a bucket of baseballs in May. And now look at the guy. I mean, I will say this though, tonight, you mentioned the weather, 57 degrees. Gerrit Cole we know he's a sticky stuff guy. He's come out and like just lied to the media about it. If it's cold tonight, like you said, and he can't get a grip on the baseball, he is going to run into some issues, and that scares the hell out of me tonight.
I love it. And not only that, let's get back to the Red Sox pitcher, Nate Eovaldi. The last time that he was out on the mound, he was pissed the way that he was pitching. And he's a better pitcher at home, first of all, than he is on the road, even though pitching in Yankee Stadium is like a little league ballpark. We all know what the power is over, you know, with that short porch and left at Fenway Park. But he was crushed in September in the Bronx. He got 7 earned runs on 2 2/3. He's never allowed more than 2 earned runs against them in 5 other starts. So I would say that Eovaldi is coming in here. I think Chris Sale came into Alex Cora's office and he was like, I want to pitch. Cora said no, sat him down, not on the roster. I think that there is a reason that Alex Cora is picking Nate Eovaldi. I think he's been their strongest suitor. The problem that I have is, who's going to be the closer in a winning situation? Is it going to be Hansel Robles? Is it going to be Adam Ottavino? I don't like either of them.
I agree with you there. So this is why my lean is Yankees on this.
Yeah.
Because since Severino's come back from the DL, he's been very good. And Jonathan Loaisiga also been very good. He's actually been taking saves away from Chapman because Chapman stunk late in the year. I like if you get into this situation now, this could end if Cole gets lit up early, this is out the window. But I like the combination of Cole, Severino, Loaisiga better than I like Nate Eovaldi and then who are we piecing together after this. And I watched a lot of Hansel Robles as a Mets fan. I watched a lot of him. He could implode.
The Red Sox pitching is definitely not one of their strong hands. I'm actually, part of me is kind of happy that JD Martinez is not in the lineup tonight. I know that they said that it would take catastrophic strong hand of God for him to come back after tripping over second base. He's on a hot streak, and I really only want him on his team when he's hitting balls out of the park. I mean, that's a guy that's streakier, you know, than anything. I can't come up with a funny.
He is very streaky. It's tough to come up
very
with.
Streaky. It's like, oh wow, JD, you care? Perhaps he doesn't know. Perhaps he can't decide whether he cares or not with this game. But if they face the Tampa Bay Rays in the next round, good riddance, he might care just a little bit. Red Sox at the very bottom of that that World Series predictions chart, I think they're plus 16-1 to win the series. Who you got in the other wild card game? That's not tonight, but tomorrow night.
So
brief me on some Dodgers and Cardinals here. So I am actually pretty surprised that the Dodgers have bailed out. I think that you have to tat tip to the San Francisco Giants for being as good as they have. I am actually very surprised that the Dodgers have put themselves in this situation.
Yeah, I think I saw a crazy stat last week. It was before the last game. It was before the last three games of the regular season. But I think since they acquired Turner and Scherzer, they were 43-10, and wow, they only gained one game on the Giants. That's how good the Giants had been in that time. Now, this is a thing. Cardinals are the hottest team in baseball right now. They won 17 straight to get into the playoffs. You got Scherzer, you got Wainwright, you have two studs. Now, Scherzer's last two starts of the season, not very good. I feel like that's really an exception. That's more of an outlier than anything else. The guy's a gamer. Yep. We all know that. He's a bulldog. He's going to show up ready to pitch. I hate that the Dodgers have to play in this wild card game. The Dodgers have the second best record in baseball, and they have to play a one game elimination. And in baseball, one game, anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
And you're playing the Cardinals, who always show up with this like devil magic and end up winning games that they shouldn't win. And this is a recipe where, looking at it from a betting angle, there's no value in betting on the Dodgers. Dodgers minus 225. All the value is on the Cardinals at plus 1.5, because that game is going to be a one run game if you go Scherzer and Wainwright right there.
Yep.
I hate that I'm saying this, but I really do think the Cardinals are going to pull the upset tomorrow night.
Okay. Well, you know, an even better bet is betting a double parlay of who you think is going to win tonight and the Cardinals, because I think there's some, you can get, I almost say plus 498 odds if you bet the Red Sox and the Cardinals to win both of those games, and some pretty good odds, I think plus 200, 250 odds you want to do Yankees and Cardinals.
That's still great right there. Yeah. I hate that. The reason I hate this, especially for the Dodgers, now everyone's going to say, all right, win your one game and you get in. Okay, but they played 162 games. They were the second best team in all of baseball, right? Mm-hmm. And now even if they win that game, they have to play the best team in baseball. So they don't even get to the LCS. They have to play the best team to get and it sucks for the Giants too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm looking at these teams, and these are some of the best teams that you thought were going to be, you know, they were going to be ranked, but now they're stuck in a wild card position. I guess we'll just have to see some October heroics. This is your most exciting season of all the months of the seasons. This is where Steve thrives.
This is exactly where I thrive. This is like, I'm tuned in to everything that's going on. And I have my like prediction was that the Brewers were going to come out of the NL. Yeah. And then Devin Williams went and broke his hand punching a wall when they clinched the Central last week, and he's out for the playoffs. So now your best setup man is gone. Mm-hmm. So now I think the AL is going to come down to hitting, because I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I don't really love the White Sox staff. I don't love the Rays staff, and the Astros staff is okay. And then Gerrit Cole is the best pitcher on the AL side, and he might go home tonight. So I think the AL is going to come down to hitting, where the NL is going to come down to pitching. And that's the Brewers rotation is sick, but the Dodgers rotation is sick. The Giants rotation has been good all year. It's really hard for me to say, oh, the Giants aren't going to come out of the NL when they were the best team in baseball all year when everybody trashed them all year long. Like, oh, they're going to fall back. They never fell back. So what do I do here? What I do is I place futures bets on all of them because they're all like plus 750 and more.
Okay. So. Yeah. So you just, this is the time when you sprinkle. Is this also the time switching gears? Is this also the time you're going to place an MVP future bet on Kyler Murray at plus 500? Because
yes.
It looks like the Cardinals are 4-0. You know, the one thing that I will take away, first of all, if you listened to the Bad Signal bets, if you faded Fallon, you lost all of your money this weekend. I went 6 of 7 with my bets. Adding to the total of 5 of 6 from the week before, you are a very rich, rich man or a woman.
You also crushed me on Rams Cardinals.
Oh, yes. I know. We were trying to do a better edge bet. By the way, this segment and this show is brought to you by Better Edge, bringing the edge back to the bettors with no fee sports betting. At betteredge.com, you, not the books, you set the price lines so you can make bank with no VIG or no sportsbook fees. Better Edge is available in 45 states for real money sports betting positions, as Steve and I are talking about it. Create an account right now. Go to betteredge.com. Use code Fallon for $10 off of your first order. Play the game without getting played at betteredge.com. Steve, I killed you on a bet, and you're so lucky. You owe me $50. I'm going big on the Rams. And I said, nope, Cardinals all day.
That was a horrible – it looked good after like a drive, and then it was over.
They blew the doors off. Yeah. This week, very, very interesting matchups. Obviously, we'll get to some of those. What were your thoughts on Derek Carr getting blown out last night? And what really last couple of games, including our good Tom Brady's return home to New England. And we will have my good friend Chris Gasper on here to just kind of make some more sense for everyone that just needs more content on Brady and Belichick and Belichick and Brady's return to New England and that embrace and the hug. And it seems like Bill was, you know, the bigger person in this, but exciting primetime games. I'm not really so sure.
Yeah. I mean, the Patriots Bucks game kind of lulled you to sleep a little bit.
It was more
defensive than anybody really would have liked. I did have the Pats at plus 6.5. I just didn't think that Brady was going to come into Gillette and blow the doors off the Patriots. I didn't think that was – everybody thought that he was going to come out and have this huge game. But, like, I just – Bill Belichick is still a great coach. Like, everybody wants to compare, you know, oh, who was it, Brady or Belichick? They worked together, and that's why they were good for so many years. So – it wasn't, I never thought that he was going to go in there and just blow the doors off them. Did I think they were going to win the game? Yes. Did I think I got it at 6.5 by the time it moved? It opened up at like 7.5. I still thought that was too big because if you would have adjusted the numbers, right? If you would have adjusted the numbers at the opening line for the 2.5 points you get as the home team, if the Bucks were at home, they would have been like a 10 point favorite. When's the last, like, a Bill Belichick team is not losing by 10 or.
I think that defensively, Todd Bowles put together a fantastic game plan for Mac Jones. He's a tough kid. He was getting knocked around in the pocket. There was a lot of blitz coverage. I think that he fared somewhat well. Okay, so it's, you know, once again, and you'll hear our next guest say that a lot of people are thinking that Mac Jones is a lot better and a lot farther ahead than Tom Brady was in his rookie season. Remember that he didn't play until November. That's the one season, 2001, you're thinking of, with his sophomore year with the Pats, when the Mo Lewis hit changed the fates of New England Patriots fans forever. But I think that Patriots run defense is absolutely abysmal. They can't run the ball either. They're going to have to make some sort of a trade on offense for the offensive line, because it could get worse. It really could. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I know that I said this last year when Cam Newton was a quarterback. It could get a lot worse before it could get better, because this was the cupcake part of the schedule for Pats fans. And it kind of scares me. I'm thinking back to those preseason futures numbers. It was like, will the Pats miss the playoffs? And I'm thinking that's almost a guarantee for me right now. And I typically wouldn't say that. It's only week 5. I don't think there's any way in hell they can compete with anyone in the AFC, in the AFC.
Yeah, the top tier teams.
Yeah.
It's just not looking great right
now. No.
But at least you got the Jets twice, right?
You always have the Jets twice.
Yeah.
And I mean the Dolphins looking like that team looks, yeah, they're real bad.
They look awful. The AFC East looks like, I know I said I didn't think the Bills were that good early in the season, and I'm sticking to it.
They've been blowing out teams by over 10 plus points.
They've been blowing out teams but even they blew Washington out 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
I was watching that game and I was like, they're blowing them out, but it looks unimpressive. it still looks like an unimpressive blowout, but they're winning by 40 points. So I don't know.
Who are you saying that to is the question, man.
Yeah, I was just watching. You know what? I was like watching it through and I was like, oh, like Josh Allen has like 80 passing yards and like, first quarter and a half. And I was like, I don't know. They look unimpressive, but they you know what? They came out, they were 17.5 point favorites against the Texans and they won 40-0. That was insane.
Yeah. So Patriots lose to the Texans. I think
it's that division is going to be won by like week 14.
Well, 13. Yeah, man. I know. Remember when we said that we weren't buying in on over 11.5 games? I think that's a given at this point.
At this point, they look like the team they are the team to beat. They look better than advertised. I'm not, you know, I want to see them play the likes of I don't even know who the upper tier teams are in the AFC right now. I think the Chargers.
The Chargers.
I think the Raiders.
Chargers, the Raiders, and the Browns.
Browns are
good too. And the Broncos.
Broncos. Oh, man.
I would say those are the top tier teams.
I love Justin Herbert, by the way.
It's like talk shit about all the rookie quarterbacks, write in all the second year guys that we love so much.
We should. We'll put MVP on all of them. Like Kyler, obviously.
We got some things to think about for later in this week. I mean, there's a lot of big surprises. Zach Wilson made some big boy, big ball throws.
He did, but he still plays for the Jets, though. Like,
exactly.
There's nothing good that's going to come out of that situation.
Oh, man. Well, predictions for tonight. Steve Armato, the Yankees and the Red Sox. And what wager are we placing together?
All right,
in tandem on the Better Edge website, we are signing. Well, no, he's already signed up. If you want to get into this bet, by the way, I already threw down $100 on the Red Sox, and I was trying to say everyone come get a piece of it, but apparently my bet like sprinkled on a bunch of different bets to lock in.
So I'm
confirming my own bias and locking in my bet with the Red Sox.
All right, I have to lock in Yankees money line.
Okay.
Yankees
money line in the under, is that what we're playing?
Yeah, 8.5, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be under. Have you seen the Yankees lineup? The Yankees lineup tonight? Well, here's the thing. This is the thing. If the Yankees win the game, it's going to be under because they're not going to – they might get 4 max. And if the Red Sox win the game, it's probably going over, to be honest with you.
So I'll take Red Sox money line in the over. You're taking Yankees money line and the under.
That's right.
And the under. And then we could talk about
who's basically we're pushing off who's going to lose to the Rays in the LDS right now.
Yeah, it's a scary proposition here. All right, Steve Armato, the bet is set. The bet is set.
Thanks, man. Thank you for having me. This is fun.
Always fun.
Good luck tonight. I know this is big for you, elimination game. So good luck. We'll see who comes out on top.
Okay, I got it. I sent some sarcasm in there. No sarcasm needed over here. I'm all in my Red Sox. Hopefully, I don't regret making that bet. Speaking of bets, you know that me and Steve, if you've been listening to the show for the last couple of weeks, we're starting to get very competitive about our picks. And our picks are brought to you by Better Edge, bringing the edge back to the bettors with no fee sports betting. That is where we place all of our bets head to head. I'm going to place a bet tonight on the Red Sox, and anyone can come and take my money on the other side. How does it work? You go to betteredge.com. You sign up for an account. You use the code Fallon. You get $10 and you see everything that we got going on. We've got competitions. We've got betting specials. We let you pick the line. Yeah, that's right. It is all on the Better Edge community. So again, Bad Signal brought to you by betteredge.com. Better Edge. Play the game without getting played. Well, this next interview, his name is Chris Gasper. He used to be a senior columnist for the Boston Globe, but now he is all over the map and he has a wealth of knowledge on the New England Patriots. So without further ado, my conversation with WCVB and 98.5 The Sports Hub's Chris Gasper. Let's just get right to it. I feel like this is such a polarizing week for Patriots fans that they're choosing sides, so to speak. You know, your team Bill, your team Kraft, your team Tom Brady. But Patriots fans really shouldn't have to choose between the two, right?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, look, obviously the Krafts at some point had to choose between the two, but I hear what you're saying. I think you can have a great appreciation for what Bill Belichick and Tom Brady accomplished in their 20 years together in the 6 Super Bowls and all that, and still, you know, root for your team. But I think here's the thing, Courtney, even while these guys were here, this was a theoretical debate, like who matters more, who's more important, who has a bigger stake in the success of this dynasty, who's ultimately on the top medal platform, you know, of the medal stand of history. Is it Brady or is it Belichick? Somebody has to be the gold medalist. Somebody has to be the silver medalist. Well, now it's like they're going to play a game. So I think people feel like what was a theoretical argument is now going to be an actual competitive contest. And that's kind of cool. I think that that's kind of a cool thing to see these two guys play it out in person. And I think you can appreciate that while still having an appreciation for what they accomplished together.
Yeah. Well, I feel like fans in general, they love their quarterbacks more than they love their coach.
I don't think that's true here. I'm going to be honest. I think people like the coach more than any of the players. The coach is the face of the franchise.
Okay. I mean, like, listen, I love them both, but I'm Team Bill. And one of the things that, like, really kind of, I don't know, bothered me. I think Tom, or was it a quote from Seth Wickersham's book or Guerrero or whoever is the mouthpiece for Tom? Said Tom, when he was towards the end of his tenure in New England, Belichick treated him like he was a 20-year-old kid and not a 40-year-old man being there for 20 years and winning 6 Super Bowls. I mean, here's my problem. That's Bill. Bill is not going to change his stripes for anyone, whether it's a Hall of Fame quarterback or the guy who took him to 6 Super Bowls and put 6 rings on his hand. Like, is there anything wrong with the Belichick way?
You know, it's a great question. I think one of the things that Bill has always said throughout the course of his time there, Courtney, is I do what's in the best interest of the team, right? And I've always said that's like a catch-all for don't pin me down philosophically. Maybe in one circumstance I did this, but that doesn't mean when that circumstance comes up again, I'm going to do the exact same thing. So I would sort of apply that to Brady. At some point, I think for Bill, and you're dead on in terms of his processing, and this is where I think it's a little bit of a blind spot for Bill. You look at his background, you know, he grew up in Annapolis. His dad worked at the Naval Academy. He was around that. You know, when you're in the Naval Academy and you're in any sort of, you know, situation like that, that's very hierarchical and very based on process, you start to believe that it's about the process and that it's sort of process over people to a degree, that if you just follow the process as a collective, you can get it done. Unfortunately, pro sports doesn't work that way. Special people require special treatment because you get special results when you have them. And I think that's maybe where Bill sort of failed to heed his own advice, is do what's in the best interest of the team. Okay, yes, this is the way that I am, and this is what I believe. But to keep this thing together and to keep this quarterback here for this one guy, I'm going to have to act slightly differently for, I don't know, what, 2 years or 3 years at the end of his career. I think he should have made that allowance, because Tom reached a point, and it's in the Wickersham book and the podcast. Yeah. And what comes through is Tom reached a point where he wanted to be more than just a quarterback. I think he wanted to be kind of like a junior partner in the Patriots. Let's say it's a law firm, right? He wanted to be like a junior partner. You know, he didn't want to just be somebody like going through the paperwork anymore. And we can debate whether that's right, whether he has that right or not. That's a fair debate. But the reality is that's what it was going to take to keep him. That's what would have been in the best interest of the team. And I think that's where Bill draws some of that criticism for this situation, is that, again, did he really heed his own advice? And you look at them on the field too, right, Courtney? They'll change their defense, their offense in a heartbeat, okay? They're very adaptable. They're very flexible. And I think he needed to display that same adaptability and flexibility in his relationship with Tom Brady to make it work at the end.
Well, you're talking law firms. I'm thinking Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis. I also know that Randall Gay, Blue Randall Gay, is a lawyer now, because when I covered the Patriots 5 years ago, I ran into him and Ty Law or someone at Patriot Place. He gave me his business card. I found that business card recently. He is a lawyer.
That's awesome.
Let's see. Where do we want to pivot here? Well, talking about the Wickersham book, it's funny because one of the last podcasts that I did before I took a nice long 6 month hiatus, Seth was alluding to this book, which I still can't get my hands on. It's back ordered. I'm getting it at the end. Oh, come on.
Got it right here. I've read some of it. You know, it's long. I sort of skipped ahead to like the 2016, 2017, 2018 years.
Oh, you jerk. I literally am like, yo, can I get a copy of the book?
How do you not have a copy of the book?
Dude. And he's like, pre-order it. So I finally did it like 2 days ago, and I'm not going to get it until the end of October. So I might have to meet up with you to steal the book so I can go that way. Well, money and input are really the reasons that Tom left. It's Tom wanted to be loved. Tom wanted to be himself. And I feel like, you know, now that's what he's emerged into. He is a businessman. The fact that he wasn't loved, has it catapulted him to the person that he is today? So it's almost, to me, if it wasn't for Bill being hard on him, then he wouldn't have the success or be who he is today.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Belichick obviously played a huge role in his development, and I think sort of pushed him, right? Bill's almost like the impossible to please father that you're always trying to please, always trying to please. And there's no question that pushed Tom Brady to greater heights. I think as he got towards the end of his career and they had won, you know, 5 and then 6 Super Bowls together, I think he just wanted to sort of get an attaboy from Bill. And that's, like you said, that's not Bill's way. You know, again, I talked to Rob Ninkovich for an interview with WCVB, and he said to me that Bill was more complimentary of him during his like retirement than during the entire time he played for the Patriots from 09 to 16. That's just not the way Bill is. And I think it's been noticeable this week just how laudatory Bill has been of Brady. And I think that's not a coincidence. I think that it's so much easier for Bill to give these guys the due that they deserve and that they need when he's not coaching them and he's not trying to get the most out of them, right? Like when he's coaching them, he's trying to push them and it's like, I got to get more out of them. No matter how good you are, I don't care if you're Tom Brady or anybody else, no matter how good you are, Bill's trying to get you to play better, to play at an even higher level. And I think at a certain point, like to your point about Tom, he just kind of became like so famous that he was able to sort of build, like a lot of famous people, build his own sort of bubble where like there was like no negativity, his own sort of, they call it a reality distortion field when it was with Steve Jobs. There, Steve Jobs would create a reality distortion field, people at Apple would say. And Brady was able to do that in terms of no negativity. But then he's going to work and he's getting tons of negativity because that's how Bill coached and that's how Bill felt like he'd gotten the best out of him for, you know, 18, 19 years. So I think from that standpoint, you look at it and say, maybe it was just destined to, it's kind of like a relationship, right? People evolve, people change, and maybe they grow apart. And that's sort of, I think, what happened to these two guys.
Tom's dad is a little outspoken. It's like, you know, Tom has this air and this class about him that, you know, he's very non-confrontational, but he'll have his outlets. Like, you'll hear what he has to say. Who is the real mouthpiece for Tom?
That's a great question. I mean, I'll say this, like in terms of, I would lean more towards Guerrero than Tom Brady Sr.
Yeah.
You know, Tom Brady Sr. is a very proud dad. You know, I think he can be an emotional guy and he's that way with all of his children. And I think obviously like any parent, if you were the parent of the greatest football player of all time, you'd also be emotionally invested in that child's success. I think Tom Sr. has a tendency to sort of go rogue. You know, and people say, oh, you know, that's Tom, you know, doing it through his dad. I don't think so. Just knowing, you know, Tom Sr. a little bit. I mean, you got to remember, you know, Tom Sr. is his own man. He's a very successful businessman. He's a 60 something year old adult. It's like anytime you deal with your parents, they always have opinions on your life. Yeah. and your job, and it's very hard to silence them. So when Tom Brady Sr. said what he said to Tom Curran, while I think some of those feelings reflect Brady's feelings in terms of, you know, feeling like there's some vindication there, I don't think it was like, hey, Dad, go out there and say this. I think Tom Brady Sr. just got excited and sort of went rogue, which he's done in the past. Guerrero's thing I thought was more interesting because Guerrero used the word we a lot in his interview with Karen Grigio. You know, we made it through. And I think at the core of the Belichick-Brady breakup is really 2017. You remember that Brady's launching this TB12 brand. Like, he's really trying to take it, Courtney, like national, international, as the book and all this other stuff. And Guerrero's his business partner and the godfather of one of his kids. And Bill banishes him from the building and the team plane. I think that was a major, major fault line in this relationship. And I think that Alex Guerrero has his own issues with Bill Belichick and has sort of always felt that Bill maybe didn't appreciate what Alex did to get Tom to play at the level he played, which ultimately has benefited Bill. And I think that, you know, the whole Guerrero situation is something that sort of bothered Tom. And they look at, you know, 2016, 2017 and sort of say like, hey, you know, why did you have to, you know, break us down and break it down and make it more difficult? Why couldn't I just have my guy around? And so I think that if there's one person who's a mouthpiece, it's probably Guerrero.
Rick Stroud was saying that Alex Guerrero is a major figure. You can't go through Tom if you don't go through Alex Guerrero. And he said that he has half of the team, half of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going and getting treated at TB12, which is a mile from the facility in this no-name building. And think about that, you know? And I even asked him, I said, have you talked to some of the team trainers and how they feel about that? And he's like, well, you know, they're very tight-lipped, but Tom's going to have his way and Tom is going to continue with this astronomical climb that he has. And if Alex Guerrero is going to make him win Super Bowls and, you know, touch his magic arm, then so be it.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the issues, right? With the Patriots. I think they, you know, we all know that the buck stops with Bill and that he has a great deal of control in that building and that to a degree, you know, Bill's the ultimate control freak and it's worked for him his entire career. That's why he's been so successful. He's a detail oriented guy and he knows how he wants everything done. And so Alex Guerrero was there sort of at the end as like this interloper in his mind as more and more guys, particularly Gronk, who's also returning, we think, for this game, you know, started to go to TB12 in New England. And that was an issue because Guerrero was seen as a threat to both the Patriots doctors and to their doctrine, right? And so now in Tampa, it seems like they're okay with it. Like, I'm sure they don't love it, but they're going to put up with it because they're like, this is what comes along with Tom Brady and what Tom Brady can do. And I think you sort of see that difference, right? I mean, that is definitely an allowance. Like, there's not a lot of players in the league that get to bring their personal trainer and then basically have their personal trainer, you know, working with half the team. There's not a lot of guys that would allow that. And I can tell you teams don't like that. But they'll put up with it because, like I said earlier in the podcast, you know, special people get special treatment. That's life. It might not be fair, but that's life.
He was also saying that Tom Brady is the de facto GM, that he called Richard Sherman before Jason Light did. And Jason Light doesn't make him that happy to hear that. But Tom has free reign down there and certainly something that was not going to happen up here in New England. Quickly before we hit on the homecoming and return and, oh, will there be a handshake or a hug or like Vegas odds and all that stuff. What's your take on Robert Kraft's play in this?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of respect, obviously, for Robert Kraft. I think you read the Wickersham book, which I know you will do eventually.
Yes,
and,
I will.
And he gets a lot of credit for holding this thing together longer than it probably would have lasted. However, where I would say Robert Kraft made a tactical mistake is this. Between Brady and Belichick, if you're going to, you know, basically ride one of those horses, you can't switch halfway through the race. And that's pretty much what they did. In 2017, they put their money on Tom. They said, okay, we're going to go with Tom. That's our horse. And, you know, Bill Belichick, whether he was explicitly told or he just sort of felt based on circumstances, really felt like he was forced to trade Jimmy Garoppolo, something he did not want to do. And we have to remember, you know, Bill gets a lot of criticism for not having a succession plan. he had a succession plan. They just didn't let him execute it. They chose to stay with Brady. But if you're going to choose to do that, then you have to back Brady all the way through, even if that means losing Bill. And then they got to a certain point where they felt like, okay, you know, Bill probably is a coach, GM, has more longevity than Tom. And this is like 18, 19. So now we're going to switch horses and we're going to say Bill's our guy and we're not going to intervene in these contract things and tell Bill he has to sign Tom to a long-term contract or give Tom what he wants. So I think that was the mistake they made. Once they backed Brady, they had to back him to the end, even if it meant, and this is mentioned in the Wickersham book, you know, losing Bill and having to replace him with Bill O'Brien or something like that. You know, you can't switch horses halfway, and that's what they did. And that's why, and ultimately you end up with nobody really being happy. And the situation sort of, you know, blew up in their face where you still have Bill Belichick, but you don't have a succession plan and you don't have Tom Brady. It's the worst of all worlds.
Well, the homecoming is happening on Sunday. I think they said that nightly news is going live on at Gillette Stadium on Friday. Yeah. Like,
wow.
They're blowing this a little out of proportion, but what can you expect? Just sort of set the scene for me about what you think is going to happen.
I mean, I think it's going to be an electric environment. This is obviously bigger than this, but I remember I covered the game when Adam Vinatieri came back with the Colts to play the Patriots. And it was, you know, really fascinating, but it was interesting, you know, Adam, for all the clutch kicks he had, Courtney, in delivering those first two Super Bowls, there were a lot of boos. It was like 50-50, like a lot of boos. I think Brady will get a cheer at first, but I think you're going to hear like a lot of booing, you know, throughout the game for Tom Brady, because the fans here are very loyal to their team and he's not on their team anymore. So, and I think you're going to see Tom be emotional, and I would not be surprised if Brady and Belichick sort of had a very quick embrace at midfield, like before the game, not right before the game, but like in warmups. One of them ventured over to the other and there was sort of like a handshake and a half hug and maybe a few words, and just to kind of diffuse any tension, which I think both guys have really been doing all week. I know people are upset with what Tom Sr. said and Alex Guerrero, but if you listen to what Tom has said and you listen to what Bill has said, I think the two guys have both really taken the high road and been very, I think, respectful, even wistful about their time together, and very complimentary of each other, even though they want to, you know, beat each other's brains in on Sunday. Two of the most competitive people in the world going against each other. So it should be fun.
I mean, I feel like lost in all of this sauce is a rookie quarterback coming off of a 3-interception embarrassment game and looking to prove himself.
You know, that's a great point. That's a great point. Not all those interceptions were his fault. You know, it's a tough spot for Mac because there's a natural quarterback comparison there, whether that's fair or not. And it's not. And it's not, as the Patriots have been saying all week, it's not, you know, Tom Brady versus Bill Belichick or Tom Brady versus Mac Jones. It's a Buccaneers versus the Patriots. But I think this is going to be a measuring stick game for Mac. You know, I've heard a lot of positive things about Mac Jones from Patriots people. I'll throw one of them out there. There are some people in that building that feel like at this stage in his career, Mac Jones is further along in both his preparation and ability to decipher defenses than Tom Brady was in 2001, which is, I mean, that's big, right? I mean, that's really big. So they really like Mac Jones. Now, I think some of that's unfair. Like, is Mac Jones going to be Tom Brady? I doubt it. But I think he could be like a Kirk Cousins type of quarterback. You know, that's a guy who prepares really hard. It's a great question, right? And I asked Josh McDaniels this question actually this week, Courtney, with a great quarterback. It's nature versus nurture. How much is coaching it up and how much is just like innate? Like, for example, with Brady, one of the things Patriots people will tell you they realize very, very early on, he has a photographic memory for football. He can come off the field and you can ask him what happened on the play that just happened, and he can tell you where all 22 guys were. That's very rare. Like, that's not a lot of people can do that. Peyton Manning can do that. I don't know really who else can do that. So Mac Jones can study all he wants, but does he have a photographic memory like that? Probably not. So, you know, that's where it's sort of unfair a little bit to Mac. But to go back to what I said about Josh McDaniels, you know, he basically said it's like the chicken or the egg, and that he wouldn't want to take the credit away from the quarterback. And what I would ask you is, if it's just the Patriots process and preparation that made Tom Brady Tom Brady, then how come they haven't been able to duplicate it again?
I think I'm going to finish you off. This was so great. Chris Gasper, where can we find you? And do you agree that in order to complete this legacy, this story, Bill Belichick has to win a Super Bowl without Tom?
Ooh, okay. So I'll answer that question first. I don't think he has to win a Super Bowl without Tom Brady. I think, though, he does have to win a playoff game or two in New England, you know, to show that he can be a real contender. It takes a lot. I mean, there's a lot of luck involved with winning Super Bowls, and what the Patriots did together was remarkable. And, you know, Tom doesn't have the six he has here without Bill, and Bill certainly doesn't have him without Tom. And, and Bill admitted that. Now, I'm more of a Brady guy, right? And it's, and I'll tell you this just quickly. It's not like, oh, Tom's better than Bill. Philosophically, for me, Courtney, I feel like there's no way you can tell me a player at quarterback, the single most influential position in all of North American professional sports, you can't tell me that a coach can have the same amount of influence. So it's not Bill Belichick, Tom Brady. To me, it's coach versus greatest quarterback of all time. I'm just going to side with the quarterback because I think he can impact winning more. So don't think Bill needs to win a Super Bowl, but, you know, double-digit win season, win a couple of playoff games, I think that helps him.
Where can we find you? You still at the Saturday show, correct?
Yes, you can find me. So first of all, I work at WCVB, Channel 5 in Boston. So you can find
my parents' favorite station. They don't find it.
So you can find me there at WCVB or WCVB.com. You can find me on social media, Twitter, @CGasper, Instagram, @CGasperSports. And then I also work for 98.5 The Sports Hub. On Fridays, I'm on with Felger and Maz, and I host my own show, co-host on Saturdays with Big Jim Murray. That's Gasper and Murray from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And Patriots and preview on 98.5 The Sports Hub with Mark Bertrand before every Patriots game. So I got a lot going on. By the way, I have to say, I'm definitely feeling the Gossip Girl headband you're rocking. I like that.
Listen, it's fall. I had to pull out some sort of fall attire. It was like the sweaters that I've had for 3 years. I was like, greasy hair. Let's go. Let's do it.
Very, very, very Blair Waldorf of you.
Oh, thank you so much. It goes well with my varsity letters that are behind me, displayed so proudly. The Take Five podcast too. That's
I forgot. Do. Yes. It's the Take Five podcast I do for WCVB. Yeah, and you can find that on WCVB.com or where you get your podcasts.
Well, that was so robust and great. And I just feel like I'm not doing enough in my life. So Chris Gasper, I mean, it's just a wealth of knowledge. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I'm stealing that book, by the way.
Yes, you can borrow. Feel free. Feel free, Court.
All right. Thank you so much.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
At KPMG, our people make the difference. It's not just something we say, it's what we do. Combining the power of people and technology, we uncover brighter insights, innovate bolder solutions, and create better data-driven outcomes. KPMG, make the difference.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.